Can I say something that I failed to mention to you before we started recording?
Yeah.
So I was uploading the Elizabeth Ennen stuff about an hour or so ago. And I hadn't checked like analytics or anything. Like when I took a break, I took a break. And so I logged back into everything and I'm looking. We gained like 250 followers across all platforms since we took a break 6 weeks ago.
Really?
I'm dead serious. Spotify, we have like 150 followers. Apple Music, we have like 175, which in retrospect, like there's a lot of damn people in the world. But
no, but still, that's so exciting.
We gained like 50 followers per platform since we took our break. And I was like, well, now I have to come back. Like, now I have to be consistent.
Oh my God. Wow. That's incredible. That is amazing news. I'm so flabbergasted and like not surprised because I love our podcast and like I have faith in our podcast, but just also like so like happy about that. I don't know.
I know, me too. I also did want to shout someone out because I've been meaning to do this for like, since February 2nd. Cheesy Tacos 48 on Apple said, Audrey and Addie are so fun to listen to. I'll definitely be staying up to date with their episodes. They're funny, care about their listeners, and very informative.
Aww. Oh, I love that. Thanks, you. Cheesy Tacos. Cheesy Taco. Cheesy Tacos 48, was it?
Yeah. And then the like caption of it is binge-worthy. I was like, thanks. I love you. I would die for you.
Oh my God. That's so sweet. That's so, so sweet.
So that was a couple months ago and I've been meaning to like say something about it and I just keep forgetting. But
yeah, that's okay.
I'm sure you don't check the reviews and stuff as much as I do.
Yeah, probably not.
Yeah. So I assumed you hadn't seen that one, but
yeah,
whoever you are, we love you.
Yes. Thank you so much. That was really nice. That made my day. Oh my God, dude. Yesterday, also, I feel like I've probably mentioned this before, but how my sleep schedule has been so screwed basically since I was born. And I don't think I've gone to sleep before like 2 a.m. in the past 3 years, like maybe a few times, but like not consistently.
Right. Like, and 2 a.m. is your, falling asleep at 2 a.m. is your sleep schedule. Like, you've
like,
never
like, that's a
really
good time for me to fall asleep.
Yeah,
too,
like, you've never
lately.
Really veered off the path of that.
Exactly. But the other night, I had, like, a really bad sleep night where I just got prescribed sleep medication. And so I took it, but I took it really, really late, and I had to wake up early the next day. And so it, like, kicked in like really late, and then I woke up very, very drowsy.
Yeah.
And the whole day I was so drowsy, like anytime I had a moment I was napping because I was so tired. And I thought that like I was like, I'm great, like I'm napping, like it's not gonna, like I'm not gonna be able to go to bed. And so like around I think 12:30 I was like laying down and I was like, you know what, let me try to just like lay down and fall asleep. And I did, and I fell asleep
this
at 12:30.
This was the night after you took it?
This was the night after.
Yep.
And after I had slept all day, too.
I remember this because you had texted me.
Yeah, yeah. I texted you at 6:30 and I was like, dude, you will not believe this.
Yeah, because I was up at 6:30 for some fucking reason.
Yeah, I don't know why people do that because, like, it was cool. Like, I was like, wow, I'm a normal person. Like, I'm waking up at, like, a normal time for some people. But I was, yeah, and then I didn't nap the rest of the day. Guys, guess what? I have the case today. I have the baton.
You didn't even give them time to say what.
La, la, la.
You said, guess
okay,
what?
Guys, guess what?
What?
I wrote the case today.
Yeehaw.
Who would have thought?
Boy,
I feel
howdy.
Like, how long has it been since I've done a case? Oh my God. It feels like forever.
Since we did Loftus House in a dollar store, Aaron Mike.
Yep.
Probably like 2 months. But I don't I don't want to count, like, the time that we were not doing this. So I would say, like, 3 or 4 episodes, if we're counting by episodes.
All right. Which makes it seem like a lot less time compared to what it actually has been.
I know.
But, oh my God, sorry. This is really dumb, but this just popped in my head. So we were playing Just Dance yesterday, Aaron and I and our friend Nora. Hi, Nora.
Hi, Nora.
I know you're listening. And so we were playing Just Dance, and we were doing this song by Kiss. And, like, the whole, like, dance, like, choreography, Just Dance is, like, the beginning of it is, like during the verse and everything, it's, like, kind of like, oh, yeah, we're rocking out. And then it goes to the chorus, and it is the fruitiest little dance I've ever seen. And it's so funny because it's Kiss. And so all day today, I've just been doing the dance because it's so, like, I don't even know. But literally, like, it is a fruity dance. And I can show it to you after we're done here, and you'll see what I mean.
Great. Great.
But that's all. That's it. I just needed to say that. I thought it was really funny. I hate it. I also accidentally punched myself in the face yesterday.
You know what? That's okay.
It happens sometimes, you know?
Are you wearing your David Bowie shirt right now?
Yes, I am, because I'm going to watch The Labyrinth later.
Shocker. Are you going to use the stuffed animals that I got you?
They're at home.
You bitch.
I know. Well, I wanted to keep them in a safe place. And I don't want them to move around because I don't want my Fiery to lose his head or his limbs.
Did you take him out of the bag?
Yes, yeah. He's sitting on my bookshelf. He is very happy on my bookshelf where I can look at him right from my bed.
So like, nice. Aw.
And then sometimes I like to go and rearrange his limbs because the limbs come off. If you guys don't know what The Labyrinth is, you have no idea what I'm talking about, then Google it and watch the movie. Then you'll understand. And those who do know what I'm talking about, I appreciate you a lot. Maybe I should do a whole podcast episode on, like, deep diving into The Labyrinth. Completely unrelated to
that
anything paranormal.
That movie just is a crime.
Yeah. Hey.
It's a good movie.
It is a masterpiece.
It's just
a fucking
nightmare.
Yeah. I feel like, and I talk about this a lot with, like, people who haven't seen it, who I, like, show it to, because I show everyone. But I feel like if you didn't grow up watching it, or, like, have some sort of, like, nostalgic attachment to it, then it's, like, kind of hard to, like, enjoy it because it is very, it's not, like, a timeless piece. Like, it is very of the time that it was created. But I think that there are certain aspects of it that can still be appreciated if you have an open mind, even though it is kind of bad. That's why I always warn everyone. I'm like, this is my favorite movie and I love it, but it's not a good movie. And yeah. I don't expect you to like it, but if you do, then great. If
I didn't
you don't
mind it.
I understand.
I would watch it again with you. I don't know. It's just strange. It's a very strange movie.
It's a fever dream. Yeah.
God, I want to so badly talk about that documentary now that we're talking about movies. Guys,
oh my gosh.
No, I'm not talking about it. I'm just saying there's a case coming up that's been a long time coming. I watched a documentary about it. I'm losing my fucking mind because I can't talk to Addie about it. And it's eating me alive because I downloaded, like, 4 books on it. And it's going to be a very, very, very long case. Like,
it's
going to
be
parts.
Worth it, though. It's going to be so good. I'm so excited because I know you're going to do such a good job. Why don't I jump into
mine?
Yes,
please.
So that
please get my mind
it.
Off of this awful thing that I'm thinking about.
So, the case that I have for you today is on Jimmy Hoffa. And he was pretty well known in his time. And I think I actually got this case idea from my uncle who knew a lot about him or, like, you know, heard about him. But I feel like maybe some people who are younger might not know who he is. But anyway, Jimmy Hoffa was the president of the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, which was a union originally for truck drivers, but now is a union for, like, a larger range of workers. Mm. But during his time when he was the president, it was for, like, truck drivers, and I think at some point he tried to get airline pilots involved in it, but that wasn't as
what
successful.
What year was this?
This was in the 1950s. It was a big range of time, but, like, this most of what is happening now was, like, 1950s, 1960s.
Okay.
Yeah, like, late 1950s into the 1960s. He started with union work at an early age and was pretty successful as a union leader. During his presidency in the union, however, he became involved with the mafia, which would ultimately lead to his disappearance, but we're going to get into that later. He was born Jimmy Riddle Hoffa in Indiana on February 14th, 1913, to parents John and Viola Hoffa. His dad was a coal miner, and he died of lung cancer when Jimmy was only 7 years old.
That sucks.
His mother moved the family to Detroit after that. Yeah.
I'm assuming lung cancer was from his work.
Yeah, that's kind of what is speculated, because he was a coal miner for a long time. So.
Usually people in that line of work, like, get diseases like that, unfortunately.
Yeah, yeah.
That sucks.
Jimmy stayed in school until he was 14, which is when he dropped out and he started working laborious jobs in order to support his family.
Aw, good kid.
And jumping forward a little bit in time, he met a woman named Josephine Pazwak during a non-unionized strike, and they got married 6 months later after they met on September 24th, 1936. So the beginning of his union work, he was involved in union action from an early age, which I stated. He worked at a Kroger grocery store, which did not pay well and had really bad working conditions.
Where was this? Was this down south?
This was in Detroit, in Michigan.
Oh, okay. I missed that. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. I kind of glossed over it really quickly. So yeah, most of this happens in Detroit, and then there's some.
I understand.
Other stuff later in New Jersey, but most of this is happening in Detroit.
Okay. Okay.
One of the first instances when he was a part of union stuff was he convinced workers to unionize when he was 18, and he convinced them to stop unloading produce off of a loading dock until a list of demands for the workers was met. And he won this negotiation, and this group of, I guess, you know, negotiators or of like this mini union was called the Strawberry Boys. And the workers organized a union at the Kroger after that, and Hoffa was quickly the face of it. And he eventually left the job in 1932, and he was asked to be involved with the local Teamsters Union in Detroit.
Okay.
Which is how he first got involved with Teamsters. Hoffa's involvement with the Teamsters organization increased membership from 75,000 members to 420,000 members in just 6 years.
Wow.
And the numbers continued to grow throughout World War II, and by 1951, there are over 1 million members.
So he's just a very persuasive guy.
Yeah, yeah. That from Good what talker. I was, yes, exactly. From what I was reading, he was very like approachable for like Charming. The workers, and he was like he was very like demanding. Like he was very involved with this stuff from a young age. So like it seemed like this was kind of just like his life's passion, but that might. As we get more into it, it's hard to say, like, I'm a little bit conflicted on his character, if that makes sense.
I totally get that. What was I doing that I was, like, conflicted? Oh, that was, never mind. Bonnie and Clyde. I didn't cover that here.
That was a different podcast.
That will be later. I will do that in a couple months.
Yes. Hoffa organized strikes and boycotts and eventually got contracts for workers to get paid better wages. The business of union work was very violent at the time, and it often involved fights with police and even violence against anyone who was considered an enemy to the union. Hoffa's troop, Local 299, was known to be one of the most violent troops in the Teamsters Union. He hired a man named Joe Franco, who was a bomb expert.
Great.
And he was hired in order to bomb individuals' cars or businesses as you know, whoever was a threat to Hoffa, basically, he would just go and like ask this guy to go bomb their stuff as like a warning.
Okay.
In order to grow the organization, Hoffa got involved with organized crime. He would make deals with the mafia to attack businesses and enemies of the union, and in exchange, he allowed them access into the pension fund of the Teamsters organization. So they basically just got whatever money they wanted from the pension fund.
Yikes.
With the strength of the mafia on his side, Hoffa was able to expand the Teamsters' influence to the West. And I think I was watching this documentary, they said that a lot of things to do with Las Vegas, how like Jimmy Hoffa basically built like half of Las Vegas with like the pension, like the mafia using the pension fund. Like, I don't know. It was kind of confusing, so I left it out. But
no, it makes sense. I kind of get it.
Yeah. Along with this expansion grew his power in the union. In 1952, he was elected as vice president to David Beck, who was elected as president of the Teamsters Union.
Okay.
After becoming vice president, Jimmy Hoffa had more responsibilities and spent more time away from Detroit. In 1957, Jimmy was elected as president of the Teamsters Union. So this was 5 years later.
Okay.
He was elected as president of the Teamsters Union after multiple investigations into David Beck found that he was committing fraud. In a documentary from, yeah, who would have thought? In a documentary from Detroit local NBC news station, it is said that Hoffa was secretly feeding tips to the government about Beck's fraudulent activities, which ultimately led to Beck being imprisoned.
He's a snitch!
Yeah. It ain't the first time either, baby. It's not gonna be, it's not the first time, and it's not the last time. Yeah, so he snitched on his coworker, on the president, and got him imprisoned. And then he became president.
As he's literally giving money to the mafia.
Yeah. Yeah, dude. It gets crazy. There's so much conspiracy that happens that, like, you would not think would be happening, but it's just crazy.
He seems very self-absorbed.
Yeah, yeah.
Just psychologically speaking, going off what I've heard so far, it's almost like Ted Bundy-ish, like, very obsessed with himself and... but can, like, convince anybody of anything, you know?
I like to think that maybe initially his intentions were good.
He just got power hungry.
But once he got power, yes, he got power hungry, I think is the case.
Okay.
So we're going to go a little bit off topic, but it'll prove to be relevant later on. The McClellan Committee was a group formed to investigate the relationship between organized crime groups and labor unions. Okay. And the head of this committee was Robert, or Bobby Kennedy, a future John F. Kennedy's brother. Yeah. So, yes. And group was the same group that was responsible for the investigation with David Beck and would eventually also investigate Hoffa. Robert Kennedy was suspicious of Hoffa, and he was very determined to put him in prison. After Hoffa became the president of Teamsters, he was investigated multiple times, but always seemed to talk his way out of it. So, in the documentary that I was watching, multiple people said that not only was Bobby Kennedy out to, like, get Hoffa, like, in prison, they both hated each other. Like, the point where, like, they personally, on a personal level, they hated each other. And it was, yeah. We'll get into that a little bit too later. Or in a little bit.
You don't want to fuck with the Kennedys. You don't want to fuck with the mafia.
Dude.
I can tell this is going to get so messy.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
In 1962, Hoffa was on trial for bribery. And during this time, Hoffa and Bobby were wiretapping each other's, like, phones. So they would, like, plant moles in each other's groups. And they would, like, wiretap each other's, like, stuff. And so Hoffa had his adopted son, Chucky O'Brien, wiretap the judge's office so they could get information from the FBI. And Bobby was still very determined to put Jimmy in prison, but this time he was unsuccessful as Jimmy was acquitted.
Yes.
And as you can imagine, the Kennedy brothers are not happy about this. And I think in the documentary I was watching too, someone said, like, oh, Bobby Kennedy said that if Hoffa doesn't go to jail, that he's going to jump off the Capitol building or something. And then after Hoffa was acquitted, Hoffa's lawyer sent a parachute to Bobby Kennedy's office as, like, a dig, you know, saying, like, F you, basically. Yeah. I'm telling you, like, this feud is personal.
This is like two high school girls, like, fighting over a boy. This is the energy I'm getting.
Yeah. In 1963, when President John F. Kennedy was assassinated, there was a conspiracy that Hoffa had actually put a hit out for John Kennedy as a warning to get back to Bobby Kennedy. The hit was allegedly taken up by Carlos Marcello, a mafia boss from New Orleans, and Santo Traficante, a mafia boss from Tampa, Florida. And they were the ones who were to arrange the execution.
Okay.
No charges were ever brought up to Jimmy Hoffa, and there's also rumors that Hoffa had hired someone to bomb Bobby Kennedy's house, but I don't know if this is confirmed or not. I think from what I was watching, like, Hoffa had talked to this guy and asked him, like, I want you to bomb his house. And the guy was, like, with his kids inside and everything. And he was like, yeah, well, they're his kids, right? So, like, obviously. And because the guy who he was going to hire, like, also had kids, he was like, this goes against my personal morals. And this is more than just, like I can't do this for you. And yeah. I think that guy also, like, went to the police and was like, I'm ratting him out because he said he wants to bomb this guy's house with his kids inside. But I don't know. I don't know if...
I have a question.
You know, yeah.
Because Jimmy Hoffa seems to be a very violent person. Not himself, but he has people do violent things for him.
Yeah.
Bobby Kennedy probably wasn't, right? Like, he never did. He never pulled any of that shit.
I don't think so. No, I don't think so. Okay. I think Bobby Kennedy was more high in,
like, the, what do you call it? Like, the social status. He was.
Yeah,
he was,
and I don't think that, because, again, like, this was kind of just the nature of this Teamsters, like, union specifically. Yeah, like, that was just kind of not their thing. It's a terrible thing to say.
No, but it wasn't.
Right. Like, it was just like very their MO, violent,
so to speak, or like,
right. It was, at the time, it was just a very violent job. Not job, but like, it was just a violent energy.
I mean, the 50s and 60s like, were violent anyway.
But I don't think that Bobby Kennedy like put it out or bombed Jimmy Hoffa's house.
I
don't think
I was just wondering if he like did anything to provoke him.
No, other I think than he just won. Like, I think that he was a threat to Hoffa's presidency and to his power, and I think that Hoffa then looked at him as like an enemy of the union, and then that's why he was so upset, because Bobby Kennedy was very like, with his McClellan group, like, they were not really afraid to stand up to even mafia bosses or like mob groups, like, they tried to take down anyone they could, and they were actually hesitant to mess with the labor unions because John F. Kennedy was going to be running for presidency, and they wanted the labor unions on their side to get the votes.
Right.
But I don't think it was necessarily Bobby wanting to like take down the labor unions. He wanted to investigate the mob associations within the labor groups.
I understand.
Yeah, it's just crazy.
There's a lot of shit going on.
Yeah, there's a lot of moving parts. When Hoffa was reelected as president in 1961, Frank Fitzsimmons was appointed as his vice president. The main role of Frank Fitzsimmons being elected as vice president was, if Hoffa ever ended up having to serve jail time, which eventually he did, Frank Fitzsimmons would temporarily take over as president while he was in jail. And that's kind of important for in a few minutes. I'll explain. So, on March 4th, 1964, Jimmy was convicted of jury tampering and charged with attempted bribery of a juror, which occurred in 1962 at his conspiracy trial in Nashville. He was convicted with 8 years in prison and a $10,000 fine. While he was on parole or probation or something, he was also convicted for one count of conspiracy and three counts of mail and wire fraud for misusing the Teamsters pension fund. Which we can assume is because of the mafia. And, oh, yeah, and I said here, probably from paying off the mafia, but I don't know, that's just my speculation, which is most likely what happened. So, he was convicted for a total of 13 years in prison, and although he tried to appeal, he was unsuccessful. He went away to the Lewisburg Federal Penitentiary in Pennsylvania on March 7th, 1967. While in prison, he still tried to maintain his power and position in the Teamsters organization through Frank Fitzsimmons, who became the temporary president after he was convicted. And Frank was initially a supporter of Jimmy, and he owed a lot of his success to Jimmy because he was able to kind of move up in the ranks, I guess. But after Hoffa was imprisoned, he tried to separate himself as much as possible. And he tried to make it difficult for Jimmy to keep his power while he was in prison.
Okay.
In 1971, Jimmy stepped down as the president of the union, and Fitzsimmons was officially elected as president. And we're going to get into that now. At the end of 1971, Hoffa was released from prison after serving less than 5 years. He was released on a presidential pardon by President Nixon.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
It's believed that Fitzsimmons had a relationship both with the mafia and with the Nixon organization.
I can't even continue. I can't get into Nixon right now.
Yeah, I know. Originally, he was only supposed to serve as president of the Teamsters until Hoffa got out, but he made a deal with Nixon that if Hoffa stepped down as president and was pardoned, that he would be made the official president of the union. The pardon would win over the support of the labor workers, which Nixon desperately wanted because he was up for re-election. Usually, the union supported Democratic candidates, but after this, they endorsed Nixon.
Of course they did.
So, Jimmy gets out. He's not president anymore.
I'm sure he's pissed.
Yeah, he was given a $1.75 million pension lump lump payment. I don't know.
Lump sum.
They say, like, yeah, lump sum from the Teamsters Retirement and Family Plan.
Did you say, what? How much?
$1.75 million.
Million?
Yeah, and this never, like, this was very rare. Like, they never did this
also,
to anyone.
That's a lot of money. That's
it's a lot of money now. Yeah.
Like,
sounds a lot like hush money to me.
Oh, yeah.
Like, get away. Don't try to get your power back. But after he was given this pension, he was unaware that one of the conditions of his release was that he had to stay away from any involvement with the union. And made him really upset. And he tried to appeal this condition in court and get it lifted, but he did not win his case. So he continued to try to win back the support of the union members, but many people were opposed to him regaining power. There was a huge split in the union over the support of Fitzsimmons and of Hoffa.
Mm-hmm.
Union members in the Nixon administration were not the only ones who didn't want Hoffa to regain his presidential position. There was also opposition from the mafia. They had a feeling that Hoffa might try to rat out the mob's involvement with the union, and they didn't want that to happen.
That's valid.
Hence why they paid him all that retirement money to kind of just, like, go, stay away,
shut the
retire,
fuck up,
stop
and
doing
go
this
away.
Stuff. Yeah. But Hoffa was adamant, and he decided to try to make amends with Anthony Provenzano, who was an old friend turned enemy to Hoffa. So Anthony, or Tony, I'm going to call him Tony.
I know that name.
So many Anthonys in the story. Yeah. So Tony Provenzano was a Teamsters local leader in New Jersey and was a national vice president. The two were friends before having a feud while they were both in prison. It's important to note that at least two of Tony's union members were murdered, and those that seemed to be in opposition of him were assaulted.
Mm-hmm.
When Tony and Hoffa had met at a motel in Florida, it did not go well, and the two tried to strangle each other.
Yep.
After this meeting, Hoffa decided to go on a media tour to win back the support of the public, as well as make his presence known to the mafia. And the mafia probably did not like this because they did not like to be threatened.
No.
Another mafia member who was involved in this situation, I'll clear this up a little bit later, but another member who was involved was Anthony Giacalone. And his brother Vito, who were members of the Detroit Mafia.
Okay.
And their involvement was allegedly to act as mediators in a meeting with Tony and Jimmy. James, Hoffa's adopted son, tried to warn him about this meeting. He believed that the mob was going to harm him or worse, and because anytime the Giacalone brothers visited Jimmy, he seemed uneasy. He just, like, didn't feel comfortable. But he didn't listen because he was very desperate to try to win back the appeal of the Teamsters Union. And in order to do that, he had to be on good terms with Tony. Like, Tony was kind of like his ticket in because Tony was, like, vice president of Teamsters. Like, he was, like, very involved. So if he could somehow convince Tony to get his support or try to, like, figure something out, then that would mean he would be able to come back into Teamsters or whatever. Rumors spread while he was, this is like while he's on this like media tour, rumors spread that apparently Jimmy struck a deal with the FBI saying that if they were able to lift his ban from Teamsters and if he became president, he would tell them everything he knew about the organized crime groups involved and that he would separate Teamsters from the influence of the mafia. So he was going to try to kick the mafia out of Teamsters if he were to become president again.
I had a feeling that's where this was going.
Yeah. And so you can imagine the mob did not like this. And they had some reasons beforehand maybe to want to get him, but now they definitely had a reason to put a target on his
back. They've definitely called a hit on him by now.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Or did they?
I don't know.
In order to try to get Hoffa where they wanted him, they had to convince him that Tony Provenzano was willing to have a meeting. And because Hoffa was so desperate to try to get back into Teamsters, he would be eager to, you know, go to this meeting and see what's up. So the two allegedly planned to meet at a restaurant called the Macus Red Fox, and he was supposed to meet there at 2 o'clock with Tony Provenzano and Anthony Giacalone. Giacalone.
It's okay. I'm not paying attention to the last name.
Yeah.
Okay, I know who you're talking about.
Yeah. I have this. This is just an excerpt straight from Wikipedia because it basically just tells the timeline. Like, I'm going to be honest, I was just kind of lazy and didn't want to,
you know,
like,
what? I felt that, actually.
Go through all this, but I'm just going to read this excerpt of Wikipedia of that day with the meeting at the restaurant. Hoffa left his home at 1:15 p.m. before heading to the restaurant. He stopped at the office of his close friend, Louis Lintau, a former president of Teamsters Local 614, who now ran a limousine service. Mm-hmm. They had been enemies earlier in their career. They became friends, and when Hoffa got out of prison, he also became Hoffa's unofficial appointment secretary and had actually arranged a dinner meeting between Hoffa and the Giacolone brothers on July 26, in which they had scheduled, like, the meeting on July 30th with Tony Provenzano mm-hmm. at the restaurant. Lintau was out to lunch when Hoffa stopped by, and so Hoffa talked to some of the staff and left a message for him before he left to the restaurant. Between 2:15 and 2:30, an annoyed Hoffa called his wife from a payphone. He was complaining that Giacolone had not shown up and that he'd been stood up. His wife told him that she had not heard from anyone, and so he told her that he was going to be home by 4 and took grill steaks for dinner. Several witnesses saw Hoffa standing by his car and pacing the restaurant's parking lot. Two men saw Hoffa, recognized him, and stopped to chat with him briefly to shake his hand. Hoffa also made a call to Lintau, in which he again complained that the men were late. Lintau gave the time as 3:30, but the FBI suspect that it was earlier based on the timing of other phone calls mm-hmm. from Lintau's office around that time. The FBI estimates that Hoffa left the location without a struggle around 2:45 to 2:50 p.m. One witness reported seeing Hoffa in the back of a maroon Lincoln or Mercury car with three other people. And as you can imagine, he got in that car, he left, people saw him, and then he's never been seen ever again. So, the next morning, Jimmy's wife calls her son and her daughter to tell them that Dad didn't come home. Where's Hoffa? Where's Jimmy? I haven't seen Jimmy. And her daughter, this is crazy to me. Her daughter claimed that she had a vision about her dad, and he was already dead. And in her vision, he was wearing exactly what he wore to the lunch meeting with Tony and Anthony, but she didn't know that. She didn't know what
he was wearing. Seen him that day, had she?
No, she hadn't. So she had this vision that, like, he was dead. And, like, I think on Wikipedia, too, it says, like, what exactly her vision was, mm-hmm. but I just thought that that was crazy. Louis Lintau went to the restaurant where Hoffa was last seen and found his car there, but there was no sign of Hoffa, and his car was unlocked.
Oh.
Yeah. This alerted Lintau that something went wrong, and he called the police, and eventually the FBI was also notified. Jimmy's son filed a missing persons report, and the family offered a $200,000 reward to anyone who knew anything about his disappearance. Mm-hmm. The main piece of evidence in the case was the maroon 1975 Mercury Marquis that witnesses saw Jimmy get into before disappearing. Mm-hmm. The car belonged to Anthony Giacolone's son, who apparently had lent it to a man named Charles Chucky O'Brien the day before so he could deliver fish. This is the same Chucky that helped Hoffa to wiretap the judge's office.
Oh my God.
Yeah, and this guy, like, Charles Chucky O'Brien, was apparently, like, Hoffa's adopted son.
Mm-hmm.
Although he was Hoffa's adopted son, they did have some rough patches in their relationship, and Jimmy's family and investigators believe that Chucky was involved somehow.
Great.
Police dogs identified Hoffa's son in the backseat of the car and in the trunk.
Oof.
Giacolone and Provenzano denied having a meeting scheduled at all with Hoffa the day before. They both had alibis. Tony said that he was playing cards with a friend of his, and the alibi seemed to check out. And Anthony Giacolone spent the day in Southfield Athletics Club, and apparently, while normally seeming unapproachable, he was talking to a lot of people there, and he kept asking what time it was. Mm. Almost as if he needed to make sure people knew that he was there and what time he was there. Sounds like maybe might need an alibi.
Exactly.
Of course, when investigators try to talk to potential suspects who are in the mafia, nobody said anything.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone was quiet. They didn't give any information to any of the police, which, why would you expect them to, or think maybe that they would open up at all to the feds?
Right.
I don't think that that's going to happen. Investigators believe that the two men who assisted in Hoffa's disappearance, Thomas Andretta and Salvatore Brigulio, had close relationships with Tony Provenzano.
Hmm.
and this is me saying this, but I feel like it's kind of like assumed, but Tony probably put a hit out for Hoffa.
Oh, yeah.
And had his henchmen do the dirty work. So, but there is some, I don't think I put this in later, but I think there was like some confusion on whether or not, because apparently Tony Provenzano wasn't like, he didn't have the superiority or like seniority to like put a hit out on someone. Like he didn't have that kind of power. So some people think that it might have been like a personal thing. Like he had beef with Hoffa. So he wanted to, like, he just wanted him dead. Mm. Because, like, in the like, organized crime group that he was, like, associated with, he didn't really have that kind of pull, you know what I mean? To, like, put a hit out on someone.
Yes. But, oh, sorry, continue.
No. Say what you're gonna say.
My thought is, like, if he knew that the mafia that he was associated with also just, like, fucking hated him because he's going around and going against them and had this deal with the FBI, whether they knew that or not. Like, they had already not liked him, so there's a chance that he could have contacted someone who called a hit on him and they just didn't give a fuck because they hated him so much anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, that too. Like, he had a pretty big target on his back, mm-hmm. So I think there were a lot of people who wanted him dead.
Yeah. I think maybe if it wasn't Tony, it was just, like, a group effort. Like, they sat down and they were like, all right, how do we go about this? And
yeah. So, to this day, investigators have not found who killed Jimmy Hoffa, and his body has not been found. Gee. There have been several tips that were investigated, but ultimately came up blank. Tony's wife died in September of 1980, and Hoffa was declared legally dead in July of 1982.
When was he kidnapped?
1975.
Okay. I was going to say it's weird that they declared him dead, but then I'm thinking if a dog picked up his scent in the trunk of a car, the likelihood.
But, yeah, so, yeah.
Unless they, like, tied him up, threw him back there, and, like, brought him back to torture. I don't know. I can't imagine they kept him alive, though.
Yeah. No, I don't think, yeah. In 1989, an agent of the FBI's Detroit office told the local newspaper that he definitely knew what happened to Hoffa, but the people who were responsible would never be prosecuted because that would require outing confidential sources and informants. A.K.A. I think the mafia.
Yes.
In 2001, the FBI matched a hair from Hoffa's brush with a hair found in Giacalone's car, but it's possible that Hoffa could have been in the car on a different day. Didn't necessarily mean, because he had also been meeting with these people before his disappearance.
And also, I don't know how it was back then, but, like, now they don't use hair evidence. They pretty much can't because, like, what
it's
without, unless you DNA test it, like, it's it's all circumstantial.
But even then, right, so, and I think too with hair, unless you have the follicle, you have, like, the actual, like, skin and, like, follicle of the hair, the only DNA that you can get from hair is mitochondrial DNA, which is not very useful unless you're trying to, I don't know, like, you can get some information on it, but it's really not going to give you that much.
Well, and they probably didn't even know they could test it back then.
Exactly. So. Yeah. Apparently, as of 2021, there are still searches for Hoffa's body in the Detroit area, but most experts believe his body was cremated.
Yeah.
So, in 2004, the floorboards of a house in Detroit were lifted. Nothing was found. In 2012, a backyard shed was searched. Nothing was found. In 2013, they actually got a tip from a mobster named Tony Zarelli saying that Hoffa's body was on a farm in Oakland Township, but again, nothing was found. It's commonly speculated that Hoffa was most likely killed by the mafia because he was a threat to them, and if he tried to regain his power in the Teamsters Union. So I have another excerpt of just some speculation. This is from Wikipedia again, because it was, like, hard to, like, paraphrase this, but I can paraphrase it now, but this next excerpt is from Wikipedia. So, in 1991, in his book Hoffa, Arthur A. Sloan said that the most common theory of FBI investigators was that Russell Bufalino was the mob boss who ordered the murder, and the Salvatore Sally Bugs Bergoglio and his brother Gabriel Bergoglio, Thomas Andretta, and Charles Chucky O'Brien were the men who lured Hoffa away from the restaurant.
Okay.
The theory is that O'Brien was used as an unwitting dupe to lure Hoffa away because Hoffa was suspicious of Provenzano and wouldn't have entered the car unless there was a familiar person there who was present.
Okay.
Keith Corbett, a former U.S. prosecuting attorney, has since suggested that O'Brien would have been considered too unreliable to be entrusted with a role in such a high-profile murder. He instead suggested that Vito Billy Giacalone, Anthony's brother, mm-hmm. was the familiar figure. And someone else says that James Buccoletto, professor of criminology at Northern Arizona University, suggested that it was likely that Hoffa was murdered 1 mile away from the restaurant at the house of Carlo Licata, son of mobster Nick Licata.
Okay.
So that's some more speculation stuff of just what people think happened. And what I've been reading, too, it seems that a lot of people think that he wasn't murdered that far away from where he was taken, but no one knows where. And the body was either cremated, which is the common thing, mm-hmm. or there was also, like, a speculation that he was put into, like, a steel drum and then driven somewhere else.
Yeah. I don't know how they would have cremated him, because, like, what do they do with the bones? You know what I mean? I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure the mafia has ways of dealing with these things. Like, I'm sure they've got people everywhere to, like, help them out and, like, put stuff everywhere. But
did you end up watching The Irishman? I remember when you talked about this.
Yeah. I haven't. I'm going to. I want to watch it because in the documentary I was watching, they mentioned it and they talked about, like,
all the people this is that what's you just wrong mentioned with the Irishman. In the conspiracy are in that movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, well, I'm pretty sure that that's what the movie's about.
Yeah, no. So the movie's not about Jimmy Hoffa, but it has to do with
all those people and, like, all that stuff. Is it about Teamsters?
Yeah.
Okay, that makes
sense. So, it's about a guy who goes to work for Jimmy Hoffa.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Frank Sheeran.
Yes. Okay, yeah. There was just so many people involved. There were a lot of people that I think I left out just because, like, it turned out that...
It's a lot.
It's a lot. It already is a lot.
It's like talking about Whitey Bulger. Like, I want to read Black Mass and cover Whitey at some point. My mother was actually around in the area, like, alive during the time.
So really?
Yeah. Same with my dad. And so, like, I just find mafia, like...
It's really interesting. Yeah, it's super interesting. There's always a lot of Tonys involved. But it's just interesting how they work and how they just, like, have so much power.
Mm-hmm.
So much power.
Yeah, The Irishman is a phenomenal movie. I've heard Paint Houses is what it's based on, which is, like, it's the book about it. And I've heard it's a really good book. I haven't read it.
That's okay. I'm like done basically.
Okay.
But the last thing is just that there's just so many places where people have said that Hoffa's body is. Again, people say that he was incinerated. One rumor said that his body was buried underneath Giant Stadium, and there's even a MythBusters episode about it. Funny enough. And more recently, in 2021, actually. Which is kind of what sparked my interest in this, because I read this article. A landfill in New Jersey was searched after the son of the owner gave a tip about a steel drum that could have been used to hide his body.
Weird.
But at the end of the day, body has been found. Most people involved are probably dead by now, and I don't really expect us to get any answers about it.
Yeah, I'm sure someone knows, but no one's going to fucking talk.
No, exactly, yeah. So, that is it. That is the story of the disappearance of Jimmy Hoffa.
Wow. That was good. I didn't know a lot of that. Actually,
it was really interesting to look it up.
Yeah. I didn't know anything about him. I knew a lot. I knew a good amount about the people that, like, worked for him.
Yeah.
But That's really
But you can see why I had kind of conflicting feelings about him, right?
Because yeah, of course. I think he started out all right, and then he just became very, very selfish and like
yeah,
started doing things for the wrong reasons. And
yeah, I think I agree with that statement as well. So. And it's funny because I feel like he wasn't even doing it for money; it was just power.
Yeah.
If he was doing it for money, he would have taken that pension and dipped, because that's a lot of money.
Yeah, especially in the 60s.
Yeah. But it's just really interesting.
If they speculate that he was cremated, that must have been just like a popular way for the mafia to dispose of bodies then, because that's just such a weird conclusion to come to without any like hard evidence, you know?
Yeah.
I fucking hate mysteries. Like, I hate having answers.
I know. I always do that to you, but you get me back by doing the real gruesome cases, so it's okay. It's fair.
Like I said, the one that I have coming up that I've been like obsessing over, it's not gonna be gruesome or anything, but it's gonna fucking eat you alive.
Yeah.
Annoying.
I'm excited. I can't wait.
That was really good. Yeah. I enjoyed it. Now I want to watch The Irishman, but I also don't want to like sit through a 3.5 hour movie.
That's right, so long. Why do people make movies that long? I don't
because
understand.
It's so good. It's such a good, it's so informative. Like, yeah, I really wish you had
really
watched
be
it before
4 hours.
I wish you had watched it before doing this. But
yeah, but that
but it's not even really about Jimmy Hoffa, it's about Frank Sheeran, so it's...
And, like, I do not have the attention span.
No, that either. Like, you're gonna have to cut it down into, like, 20-minute increments as if it's, like, episodes or, like, chapters of a book, you know?
Yeah.
Because they could have very well made it a series, and... But they didn't. I don't know why.
Yeah. I don't know how people would... Because it was in theaters, right?
No, it was a Netflix original, I believe.
Oh, it's a Netflix original. Okay, never mind. No, I remember, I think someone, I don't know, either my dad or someone, like, said that it was really good. I know people, like, talk about it, and it's very good. It has good reviews, but I'm sure I'll watch it at some point. Mm. My brain can't handle sitting it and watching it in one sitting.
No.
But
it's good. It's just not worth sitting through for that. It's like, the fucking Titanic is obnoxiously long, too, but... I also, like, never liked the Titanic. Anyway, but it's hard with people with peanut squirrel brains like us to, like, have the attention span to watch something that long.
Yeah. Especially since we share a brain cell. And I'm pretty sure Aaron has been stealing the brain cell as well. Like, it bounces between three of us now, not
what
just two of us.
Makes sense.
I know. But
I think she just, it doesn't want to live in my head because I've been sick, but it doesn't want to spend too much time in one place. So it found a cadaver.
Another victim. Yeah.
All right. You want to do this?
Yeah, I can do the sign off. First of all, thank you everyone for listening.
Yes, thank you.
And thank you to the new people who have followed us.
I know.
I really appreciate that.
Thank you, Cheesy Tacos 48.
Yeah, thank you, Cheesy Tacos. I know I might not look at the reviews, but Audrey always does, and she always sends them to me, and they always make my day. But if you want to follow us on our socials, we are on Instagram at YourWorstNightmareTCP, and we're on Twitter as well at NightmareTCP. If you would like to send us an email or send us any case suggestions, you can email us at yourworstnightmaretcp@gmail.com. And we also have a Patreon, and you can become a Mothman baddie and get unedited episodes and episodes early and some other stuff.
Episode
I think we're
notes.
Also possibly, yeah, notes.
I'm trying to get a... I haven't, like, actively done it yet, like, tried, but... I'm going to try to see if we can get handmade items on Etsy 10% off for Patreon.
Yes. Yeah.
So
that'll be a benefit if you support our Patreon, if you would like to support us in a financial way. But we appreciate everybody's support. Anyone who listens or leaves a review or what's it called? Like the five star, the stars. I don't know.
Yeah.
Because there's like also, the written reviews and then
Spotify
the
has ratings now, so please go rate us on Spotify.
Oh, yeah.
And Apple, because it does help a lot.
Yeah.
I don't know if you ever said Patreon.
Oh, I'm sorry. Patreon is patreon.com/yourworstnightmareTCP.
Yes.
I'm pretty sure.
And then our Etsy is at NightmareTCP. Right. Just like the Twitter.
Yeah. And that's it. Thank you guys so much for listening. And we will catch you next time. Hope you enjoyed it.
And we're going to have a episode where both of us are telling a story. So you get the best of both worlds.
Exactly.
And that's it. Okay. Love you. Bye.
Love you. Bye.